Good afternoon. I think the last time I was at the building here in Vandalia was 1965 or 66. It's been a long time, and I'm very happy to be back here. I've been asked to speak on a subject entitled In Our Own Defense. On December the 15th, 1968, Brother and Sister Herb and Thelma Gray of the Gregory Boulevard congregation didn't show up for services. Phone calls were made, no answer. After the services were over, some of the men went to their home. Their car was there, but there was no answer at the door, and the men got worried. They called the police. The police made entry into the home, and they found the bodies of Brother and Sister Gray. They'd been murdered the day before. This is not the first time that members of the church have been murdered. It's not going to be the last time. Just the last time anybody that I knew was murdered. But I've known other members of the body of Christ to be assaulted, to have been robbed. And I'm sure many of you, if not most of us, know someone that has faced that. It is a dangerous world we live in. You do not need to go to Afghanistan or Pakistan to face danger. Every night when you turn the news on, you hear of somebody in your locality that's been assaulted or murdered. Do we have a right to defend ourselves and our families with physical resistance? In other words, do we have a right to fight? Do we have a right to arm ourselves to protect our families? And for the next few minutes this afternoon, that's what we're going to be talking about, and we're going to be looking at it strictly from a Bible viewpoint and looking from the Bible examples and the teachings that we have. Christ in the sixth chapter of Luke gives us a teaching on getting along with people. People we don't like, our enemies. What does he say? Turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek. Paul in Romans tells us, if it's possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. And those are two good examples. Those are two prime lessons that we have been given on how to live with people. People we don't like. People that don't like us, and people we don't even know. If it's possible, as much as lies within us, Paul puts those two caveats in there. Live peaceably. Why does he put those caveats in there? Because it's not possible to live peaceably with all men. We should turn the other cheek. We should do everything within our ability and within our means to avoid problems. If that means walking away, if that means avoiding certain places and certain people, then that's what we have to do. But if someone is intent upon harming you or harming your family, what's left? In Exodus, the 22nd chapter, the children of Israel are given the old law. And in that chapter, and in that verse, the second and third verse, it says, if a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall be no blood shed for him. If a thief breaks into your home, if a thief or someone endangers you or endangers your family under the old law, the children of Israel could defend themselves to the point of death for that individual. And there was to be no retribution against them for that. But the law goes on and says, if the sun rises upon him, there shall be blood shed for him. In other words, if that person is no longer a threat to you or your property, and you go after them, and you harm them, you're at fault. You're the one that's wrong now. Defending ourselves is one thing. Under the old law, you couldn't take retribution against that person by yourself. Christ speaking in Luke, the 12th chapter. Now, he is speaking on being watchful for the kingdom that's coming. Being prepared for that kingdom. And looking out for it and being ready for the second coming, actually, of his coming. And it says, "And this know, that if the goodman of the house had known what hour the thief would have come, he would have watched and not suffered his house to be broken into." I think there's a dual lesson there. Yes, we are to prepare for the coming of Christ. We are to be watchful and ready because we don't know when it's going to happen. But Christ used several examples in that message, and one of them was protecting your home. John, the 15th chapter. "This is my commandment, that ye love one another," "that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than he lay down his life for his friend." What kind of love did Christ have for us? Anybody? Unconditional? One word I'm looking for.
Sacrificial.
Sacrificial. Thank you, John. Christ had sacrificial love for us. He sacrificed for us. He sacrificed everything for us. He gave up heaven, where he is God, to live as man for 33-odd years. Think about that. Think about the sacrifice that he gave. And then he came down and he lived with us and among us with all the problems and all the troubles of humanity. And then his own people betrayed him, spit on him, beat on him, crucified him, and killed him. That's sacrifice. And this is the kind of love the apostle or Christ is talking about here. Sacrificial love. Laying down your life. So we are to follow the example of Christ. We are to be ready, if necessary, to defend one another. I'm going to speak for just a few minutes to the young men that are not married. Some of you have got several years before you will be married, before you're contemplating marriage. Some of you, it might be much closer. There is a verse that we're going to look at that you need to pay very close attention to, because it directly concerns you and the woman you look at for marriage. Ephesians, the 5th chapter, the 25th verse. "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Young men, regardless of whether it's in the next year or two or few years, or it's further down the road, when you go to contemplate marriage, you look at that young woman. If you are not ready to die for her, she is not the woman you need to be married. You need to find someone else. This is not, I do not think, brought out enough to our young men before marriage. I don't know what the elders of various congregations or what evangelists do when they're counseling young men and women about marriage. I don't know what they say. I don't know what other fathers say to their sons when they're contemplating marriage. But I don't think it's something we talk enough about to young men. I don't think we preach it and stress it enough. If you're willing to die for that woman, you can put up with the toothpaste cap not being put back on. There's a lot of things that that young woman may do that you can put up with and that you will do a lot more for if you're willing to die for her. Sidebar, there's too much divorce in the church. And I think that there are too many young men that are marrying women they're not willing to sacrifice for. And there are too many young women that are not looking at that man as someone who is willing to sacrifice everything for them. And if we begin to stress that, and our young men and our young women look at that, then they may take marriage a little more serious before it occurs. Romans, the 12th chapter and the 18th verse. If it's possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. As I said, we may have to do something other than just physically, or use physical force to defend ourselves. What happened between Abram and Lot? What did they do when there was conflict? They separated. Abram and Lot had vast flocks, vast herds. And their servants, their slaves, were fighting over the water and the grazing rights. So Abram and Lot just separated to avoid a problem. You know, you may have somebody you really like, but for some reason or another, you can't get along and you may just need to separate. That just may be the best thing to do, is just get away from one another. What was Saul's opinion of David? What did Saul try and do to David? He tried to kill him. What did David do? Pardon? He tried to love him, but then what did he do? He ran. He got out of Dodge. He left. He was gone. You know, sometimes that's what we may have to do. We may have to just run away. As much as possible, as much as lies within us, live peaceably. But it's not always possible. It is not always within our ability to control things. And yes, I believe the Scriptures give us license to use physical violence to defend our lives and defend our families. Exodus, the 20th chapter and the 13th verse, Romans 13 and 9. Can anybody quote them? Sure you can. Thou shalt not kill. That translation has caused no end of problems to the church and to individuals struggling with thou shalt not kill. I went to Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words because I don't understand Greek any better than most people. And what I got was that that word kill is poorly translated. It should read, thou shalt not murder. We are prohibited by God from committing murder. What is murder? Murder is the unjustified taking of life. Justification. How do I justify taking a human life? I believe the scriptures give me license to defend, key word, defend myself and my family. They do not give me license to go looking for trouble. So sometimes I have to avoid problems. I sometimes have to run away from problems. I have to remove myself from them if that is necessary. But that's a poorly translated word. We are not told you cannot kill someone. We're told you cannot murder. The unjustified taking of life. One of the other things that the elders asked me to talk about was, in defense, can we take life? Can we use physical resistance, physical violence to resist? And is it advisable? Well, not if you can avoid it. It's not advisable. If you can avoid it, no, you do not want to resort to that. Because let me tell you something, I've tried it. You get hurt. Even if you win, you're going to get hurt. If you can avoid it, do everything you can. Is it advisable? Depends upon the situation. I was a building inspector for a time for the last few years before I retired. We had one of the other building inspectors had a photographic memory and an encyclopedic recall of code books. Literally. Kip, what does the code book say about such and such? And he could quote it to you, word for word. We got into a bad habit of going to Kip for references instead of looking it up ourselves, because it's always better to look up and do the research yourself. You learn more, you remember more. So Kip got tired of it, and he had a stock answer when we'd say, what does the code say about this? Is this okay to do? And his answer became, it depends. Well, that's what I'm telling you. Is it advisable to resist? Is it advisable? It depends. What's the situation? I don't know. Somebody, if you're sitting at a stoplight in your car and somebody walks up and sticks a pistol in your face and says, get out of the car, I recommend you get out of the car right then, as quick as you can. But if somebody comes to your home and it's the middle of the night and they're trying to break down the door, or they break down the door and they get in, then you may have to resort to something other than it depends. You may have to resort to something other than getting out of your home, because you may not be able to. But is it advisable? Not if you can avoid it. Not if you can avoid it. How did the first and the second century Christians respond to this? I can find no record, biblical or secular, where first century Christians banded together to form an armed forces or a resistance group to resist the persecution of the church. Now, we know from secular writings, they hid. They worshipped in caves. In Rome, they worshipped in the catacombs. In other areas where the Romans had catacombs, they worshipped there. They went out into the fields, away from the cities. But I can't find any record where groups resisted. Did individuals? Again, I have no record of that. I can't find one. But I wouldn't be surprised if some did. If you would, we're going to spend a little bit of time over in the 22nd chapter of Luke. And you might want to, if you've got a Bible, turn and look at that, because I think this is a very key point in what we're talking about. Christ just told about Peter that he's going to deny him three times. He's just instituted the Lord's Supper. He's finished the last Passover he will observe with his apostles. And they're getting ready to go to the Garden of Gethsemane for him to meditate and pray and to prepare himself for what he knew was coming. And after Peter had, he'd told Peter that he would deny him three times, he said, "When I sent you without purse," this is the 35th verse, "and without purse and script and shoes, lacked ye anything?" And they said, "Nothing." And then he said unto them, "But now." Very key language. The situation's changed. Over here we had this. I sent you out without script, without purse. Just go, I told you. Don't worry about anything. Just go and preach. Okay, but now things are changed. Things are going to be different. "But now, he that hath a purse, let him take it, and likewise his script. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one." Christ was telling his apostles to arm themselves. Get ready. This time, you've got to make preparations for those journeys you're going to take. Where did they go the first time? When he sent them out without any preparation, where did they go? Where were they? Judea. They were among their own people. They could knock on a door and get a meal. They could find a place to sleep. It wasn't a problem. They could travel with others because they were all of the same people. But now, get your purse, get your money. You're going to need it. You're going to be going places where it's dangerous. And you're going to have to defend yourself. You're going to need a weapon. Because where was he sending them? All the world. They were going to be going all over the known world. And he was getting them ready for that. Christ was telling his servants, his apostles, arm themselves. "For I say unto you that this that is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was reckoned among the transgressors for things concerning me have an end. And they said, Lord, behold, here are two swords. And he said, it is enough." We kind of pass over that a lot of times. But when Christ went to the Garden of Gethsemane after the Passover and took some of his apostles with him, they were armed. They were armed. We know what happened in the garden. A mob came after him. They were armed. Matthew tells us they had swords and clubs. And they came and Peter got antsy. And he pulled out the sword. So we know Peter was armed. And he cut off the ear of the servant of the high priest. What did Christ say? "Put up your sword, suffer this. Suffer ye thus." He healed that man. You know, I've often wondered what that guy thought about Christ after that. He got his ear cut off, and Christ picked up the ear and put it back on, and he was healed. I don't believe there was any blood, there was no hearing loss, there was no pain, because he was healed by Christ. Wonder what he did in the next few hours. But he told Peter, "No, this you're going to have to suffer." One, he knew that he came to die for mankind, and if an armed rebellion grew up around him to protect him, then all sorts of things would not work the way God had planned them. But he also said something else. He said, "Wait a minute, don't you realize if I wanted an army, I could call 12 legions of angels?" How many men are in a legion, do you know? between 5,000 and 6,000 in a Roman legion. How many legions did Rome have in Judea at that time? One. So Christ could have called between 60 and 72,000 odd angels against 5,000 to 6,000 Roman soldiers if he wanted a battle. But he didn't. He was telling them, I believe the message going to the apostles was, there is a time and a place for everything. You may have to defend yourselves against attacks, but the church doesn't need your sword. You traveling may be set upon by dangerous people, and you have a right to protect yourself and your life, but the church doesn't need your weapon. One of the things that we had talked about that I talked with the elders was the logical extension of this is to get into, are Christians justified in participating in warfare? That's another topic for another time, simply because we don't have any more time. And it would take an equal amount of time to scratch the surface. We have examples throughout the New Testament, or throughout the Bible, of God's people defending themselves with physical resistance. We have Christ telling us that we should have sacrificial love one for another, that we should love one another as Christ loved us. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Yes, I believe that we have a right to use physical resistance to defend ourselves, but always, always with that caveat, if it's possible, and as much as lies within us, live peaceably with all men. It is our responsibility to do everything within our power to live peaceably with all men. Thank you.